And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 13th, 2021. Well, there's a little town in Massachusetts called Weymouth, which figures large in the global warming battles here in the state. Weymouth is the site of a natural gas compressor station proposal that has been the subject of many ups and downs. It has many, many intersectional, if I could dare say that word, many issues come together from climate justice, environmental justice, corporate power, government hanky-panky, all kinds of things coming together in the construction of a natural gas facility in the downtown of a city in Massachusetts. There have been many ups and downs in the story. The most recent is a bit of a glimmer of hope, I think could be said, in that the new Biden administration, the Federal Energy, FERC, what is FERC's name? Anyway, let me say that we are tickled pink today to be joined by Alice Arena, who is the founder and president of the Four River Residents Against the Compressor Station, FRRACS, but she is the heart and soul of the work there, and describes herself as just the hub of a big wheel that keeps communicating people information back and forth. Alice, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me on, Ted.
That's great. So I briefly described what's going on in Weymouth, but you are light years ahead of everyone else. Tell me, what's going on in Weymouth vis-a-vis the compressor station? What should people in Massachusetts know about as far as this all goes?
Okay, so the first thing that I'm going to tell anybody, because this has been a six-year fight, and when I think about it, even I can't believe that we've hung on this long and that people have remained active and interested. It's been incredible. So I always tell people, go to nocompressor.com, go to the news dropdown, and start at the beginning, because it literally goes back to 2015. So right now, I will tell people that the compressor station itself is fully constructed. They, as far as we can tell, and we have people who are on the site, I get down there several times a week, but I'm not there as much as some of our active members. They are on the site every single day, 7 days a week. And they're on and off the site, so they know the smells, the sounds, the construction, you know, everything that's going on.
And those people, Alice, they tweet, right? So there are people, yes, tweeting continuously pictures and the goings on the site. So if anyone's interested, they could find those. We can talk about those links later if you want, but yes.
Right. And one of the very active Twitter accounts that would shows lots of pictures and film and things like that is Elf on Site. So that's Ash the Elf. And so we have many, many elves who watch the site and are very active on that. And so fully constructed, they had been shut down by Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, and I'm going to call them PHMSA from now on, okay, as of October 1st, because they literally had two accidents before they even went online, which tells you slipshod construction, you know, whatever. They were in such a hurry to get this up that they made mistakes. And in an area like this, a mistake is a fatal mistake, because it's just too populated. And that is not to throw our rural brothers and sisters under the bus, because we don't believe these compressor stations should be anywhere.
Right. But you know, the monitoring, or the people, your colleagues who are taking, just to set the stage, I've been there a few times, not as often as I should, but there's a bridge, the Four River Bridge, which is a bridge that crosses into Weymouth. There's a little plot of land just below it. You can stand on the bridge and watch the compressor site being built and now being operated. It's right there, and there are housing developments within hundreds of feet, I think. I mean, right. So all the things you, this is not a distant image. This is something that's right in your face when you go into Weymouth, right?
Yes, absolutely. Which is one of the biggest problems with the whole, you know, thing is that these compressor stations do have accidents, and an accident in that location. And just to give you a little, about 0.2 miles across the river are hydrogen tanks. So imagine the heat signature of any kind of accident at a compressor station hitting those hydrogen tanks. Now you have a hydrogen bomb.
Wow.
And this is, you know, we have told every government agency about this. We have given them the whole landscape. It's just, it's a story that just like transcends it. And you just say, who was the crazy person who thought this would be a good idea? So while we're at this stage of this full construction, and they have not run the turbine yet, and that we're 99.9% sure of because of the folks that are on site, mm-hmm. listening and watching and smelling and all that other stuff. But today they commissioned, and this is another reason we think the turbine hasn't been running, they finally commissioned the backup generators. So a plant like this obviously is run by electricity, and if the electricity goes out, they have to have the backup generators to keep the turbine running. So those generators needed to be commissioned before you ran the turbine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we're pretty sure they haven't done it yet. But we've had some interesting developments, as you said. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, is looking at the case again, but we're in a very, very weird situation. In December, we were on the agenda with the FERC meeting then, and Commissioner Chatterjee said he didn't want to take it up because he thought there were some very important issues to talk about in Weymouth, and two of the commissioners, one had just been seated and the other one had not been seated yet. So they were still working with three commissioners instead of five.
So this is December of 2020. FERC right. is a federal agency, nothing to do necessarily with Massachusetts, right?
Right.
It's in a transition time. This person named Chatterjee is in charge of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or he's what?
He was a commissioner. He wasn't the chair, right?
Okay. And there was a meeting for your group. I mean, there's so many different groups running around. The FFRACS was requesting something from the commission, and this Chatterjee commissioner said, oh, hold up, we need to think again, right? That's the circumstance?
Yeah, yeah. That's sort of it. I'll do a real quick timeline.
Mm-hmm.
On September 24th, they gave FERC, granted the energy company Enbridge, the right to operate that compressor station. So it was all constructed, but they still needed that final sign off to say that they could operate. And so they got that on September 24th. We immediately filed what we call a request for a rehearing in front of FERC, saying that they issued that certificate in error because they never looked at anything. We're just going to be honest. You did not look at environmental justice. You didn't look at climate. You didn't look at safety. You didn't look at anything at all. You just said, sure, they can build this. So we filed a request for a rehearing. Now, FERC has been in some trouble for how they handle these requests in the past. So that technically, they have 30 days to say, yeah, we'll give the rehearing, or no, we won't. But they were also playing this little game called issuing a tolling order. And what the tolling order said was, well, we're not going to deny you the rehearing, but we're not going to give it to you. We want some time to think about it. Well, that time could go for 2 years, and they never do anything. And in that 2 years, our group or groups like ours could not take them to court.
Mm-hmm.
So they got in trouble. There was a court case, and they were told, you can't do this anymore. So they issued... In November, I think it was November 23rd, they issued a draft denial of our rehearing request. Now, notice I said draft. So right at that time, we could have said, oh, to heck with you. We're going to take you to court. We're going to, you know, we're going into the federal court again. We're already there. We're going again. But we hung back a little bit to see, okay, well, what the heck did you mean by this draft denial? And then in December, early December, when FERC had their monthly meeting, it was on the agenda, and Chatterjee said he wasn't happy with this denial. He was like, look, there's stuff we needed to look at in this compressor station that we haven't looked at before. I'd like to put it off till January so the other two commissioners can weigh in. So we were like, well, this could be good or it could be bad, sort of depending on FERC. And in January, three of the commissioners, Chatterjee, Glick, and a new commissioner, Clements, voted against the draft denial.
Against said, the denial, which means right. Essentially in favor of...
of a rehearing.
Of a rehearing, okay.
Well, sort of. Okay, so they did that. We're like, okay. And it was amazing, sort of some of the things they said. Commissioner Glick, who is now Chairman Glick, okay, so like the day after Biden was inaugurated, he made Richard Glick the chairman of FERC, which was good. That was a good thing. But during that January meeting, he said they build compressor stations in areas like this, meaning Weymouth, because rich white people don't live there. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
we've got the quote in, you know, on paper, because it was like, what did he just say? Because he, and this is something that he has brought up, he's tweeted as of yesterday, about looking at environmental justice status and communities, which we have two environmental justice communities, neighborhoods that abut this compressor station. As you said, there are housing developments. There is an elderly, low-income federal housing development less than 0.2 miles across the river from this compressor station. And it's in a wind direction that they're going to get hit by the off-gassing of this compressor station. So they never looked at any of this. They just, FERC has always been known as a rubber stamp organization for the fossil fuel industry. And they proved it in all of this.
Do you have any sense what changed? I mean, is Chatterjee a hero? Is Glick, is a point of, I mean, do they have a change of heart? Or are there new people?
It's odd. So Neil Chatterjee had been the chair of FERC. Now, he's a Republican. And so what happens with each administration, obviously, they stack it with, you know, three Democrats and two Republicans or vice versa. So Neil Chatterjee, who was a Republican, he was made chair by the prior administration. And I'm not going to mention his name. So the prior administration tapped Chatterjee to be the chair, but Chatterjee had been talking about climate change. And he had been talking about how FERC needed to incorporate issues like climate change and environmental justice into their decisions. Well, the prior administration didn't like that kind of talk. So they demoted him, and they made Daly, I believe is his name, the chair, and he is a fossil fuel guy who could care less about climate change, who could not care less about climate change or environmental justice. So he's no longer the chair.
Interesting. So, I mean, there's this whole, I don't know what the universe of things with FERC, right? FERC is a whole topic of a PhD thesis in and of itself, right? To try and explain what...
exactly. Exactly. You could spend years on that.
So in January, they decided to not... to kind of accept a hearing, sort of, right?
Yeah.
You were there when I distracted us down a different...
It's kind of like a double negative, you know, right. They're denying the denial, right. Whatever that means. But What they did not do, they said, okay, we're not going to accept the denial. Okay, that's good. But they didn't put us on the agenda for this month to talk about a rehearing rehearing. Okay, so if you're not going to deny the rehearing, you need to approve the rehearing. So what they did, and Frax, that's what we call ourselves, okay. Frax, sent a letter immediately on the docket, the FERC docket, and said, you know, thanks so much for considering us, but you have issued a de facto tolling order because they didn't deny us, but they didn't approve us. Now we can't take them to court. Mm-hmm. We're stuck in limbo again. If they had denied it, we would have said, fine, we'll see you in court. If they had approved it, our heads would have blown up and we would have said, whoa. And one of the fascinating things about this is that our attorney, Michael Hayden, who has just been phenomenal, he and I were talking about this meeting afterward, and he said, you're probably going to have to do me a favor. And I said, what? And he said, well, you're going to have to reach out a little bit, because he said, if we get the rehearing, he said, I have no idea what that looks like. So I said, okay, let me, you know, poke around. So we went to the attorneys at Food and Water Watch, and they said, yeah, we have no idea, because FERC has never issued a rehearing like this.
And this is just to remind myself, this is a rehearing on whether or not the license from last September can be valid.
Right.
Right. So the real thing here is the compressor plant needs this approval license. It was sort of kind of granted in September, sort of kind of taken away, and now everyone's in limbo, like floating in outer space, waiting for something to happen. And it's either on the agenda or not on the agenda, but what's at stake is somehow having a hearing that includes climate and environmental justice in the determination of whether or not the Weymouth compressor should even exist, right, or go into operation.
Right, exactly. I mean, wow. It's there. Okay, so the building is there. We joke about the fact that we're going to stop them from operating, and we're going to turn it into the Boys and Girls Club of the Four River Basin. You know,
it would look like every Boys and Girls Club I've ever been in.
I know, exactly. We'll have some very interesting architecture there. so we, you know, our goal, truly, and Enbridge is fully aware of this because we say it all the time, is to make it a stranded asset. Mm-hmm. To just, okay, you built it, there it sits, but you can't use it. And there's a myriad of reasons why they should not be allowed to operate it at all. And those are obviously our arguments against this particular certificate.
So can you, let's pretend we're having the hearing, right? We say, okay, go, you know, give me the top two or three reasons why we should not have a compressor station in Weymouth.
Okay, so, you know, if you're going to talk strictly business, okay, and this is where you kind of get FERC, you can say that the gas that they want to put through here, and of course, we're also considering our brothers and sisters in Pennsylvania, because we got to stop the fracking down there. But the gas that you're bringing up through here is not needed. It is not necessary. And literally, in, I think it was November, I lose track of time, Ted, I'm sorry. I think it was November of 2019, National Grid, who has one of the big contracts for this gas, said we don't need the Weymouth compressor station in order to meet our domestic obligations for the next 14 years.
Wow.
So domestically, they didn't need it. Now, let's go to Canada, where the majority of this gas is being shipped. You've got two things. Enbridge has now circumvented the Weymouth compressor station by bringing gas along the Trans-Canada pipeline and going straight down through Maine into Portland, and they can ship that to Canada. They don't need the compressor station in Weymouth anymore. They circumvented us altogether. So that's number one. Number two, the Canadian proposition is that there was supposed to be an LNG facility built in a place called Goldboro, Nova Scotia. That the plan for that facility has been on the books since 2013 and prior to that, and they've never put a shovel in the ground. I'd take my chances with three card money with the guy on the commons before I deal with those people, because this has been a scam.
And so, from FERC's perspective, they're interested in the business proposition and sort of the benefit to the United States and Massachusetts in particular for building anything, right? So if you come along and say they don't want, you know, there's no use for this gas, they've already circumvented it, it's stupid to build economically, that's something that plays with FERC.
It definitely should play with them. And also it should play with everyone, the fact that companies like Enbridge, they get to build these facilities, and guess who pays for them? The ratepayers. You and me. Not their stockholders, not their investors, who should be on the hook for it, but you and me. That's who pays for it. And everyone should be up in arms about that, whether you're talking, you know, our compressor station or some drilling rig in Pennsylvania. It's all an incredible scam. So that would be my first thing. The economics of it are not there.
Right.
And that's what would interest them most. They don't care about us. They don't care if they blow us up. So, you know, I'm just being frank here. So the second thing that I would bring up is that there are federal environmental justice laws on the books. Our environmental justice coordinator, Reverend Betsy Sowers, is always throwing Title VI from the Civil Rights Act up there, saying they are violating the Civil Rights Act of 1964 by doing what they are doing. And if you look across the nation as to where compressor stations and drilling rigs are, they are 99% in environmental justice areas. Mm. Because why not? Those people are poor. They're minorities. They don't have a voice. What the heck? You know, we'll dump on them. This has been the attitude. And so that's the second thing, is you never addressed these federal laws that have to do with environmental justice. You allowed Enbridge to literally, I'm not kidding, this is in the environmental assessment, to say there's no problem. Oh yeah, there's an environmental justice neighborhood here and here. We don't care. They let them say it. We just don't care. So, okay. So they never address that. And then the third thing that seems to be ringing bells at FERC right now is climate change. Every time you build one of these facilities, they release massive amounts of just completely uncontrolled and uncharted, and it's not even natural gas. We don't say natural gas here in Weymouth. We say fracked gas. It releases just millions of cubic feet of raw fracked gas into the atmosphere every year. Untracked, uncharted.
This is the blowdown operation, no, or is that separate?
It's a combination of the blowdowns. Yes, those can be massive. According to our friends in Pennsylvania, these compressor stations have blowdowns, small or large, upwards of 400 times a year.
So, and just for people who may not, the blowdown is this operation where they essentially clear out the pipes of the compressor so it runs better. But what's involved is just releasing all the fracked gas, all the methane that's in the pipe just gets blown into the air. And it sounds like a jet taking off because it's stuff roaring under huge amounts of pressure. And it's just a stinky methane gas, you know, dumped into 0.2 miles away from the senior housing, right? I mean, that kind of thing. Yep. So, okay. So that's the methane emissions that are annual and just terrible thing all by itself, right?
Right. And that doesn't, you know, there was a study that came out probably a year or two ago that basically said that the EPA and the industry had miscalculated the emissions by as much as 60%. And I don't even think that's high enough. They just literally, they just flat out lied. Mm-hmm. And I keep using that word literally, but it's absolutely true. They flat out lied as to what is coming into the atmosphere. So you've got the blowdowns. That's definitely a problem. You think to yourself, well, that's crazy, but they're designed to leak, because if they didn't, they'd blow up.
Really?
So you can't have that much pressure, you know, just sort of bound up with fracked gas, with methane gas of any kind.
And that the pressure in the pipes, I think, is 700 pounds per square inch, which is something like 10 or 20 times atmospheric pressure, right? So it's really high pressure.
Right. And they actually, so they have been running, there have been pipelines in this area, in the same area for 20 years. And they have been operating and they have been delivering gas all the way to Maine without problems. Okay. They didn't need the compressor station. They've been delivering the gas for 20 years, running between 450 and 750 PSI. They want to run now at between 950 and 1440 PSI in pipes that have been sitting in a corrosive environment for 20 years. What could go wrong?
Oh, yeah. What could go wrong with that? I mean, that's completely reasonable.
You know, as bad as it is, it can be mitigated. You know, there's lots of things you can do with carbon capture, planetary, you know, that kind of thing. With methane, there is no such thing. Mm-hmm. It, once it's in the atmosphere, it's a 25-year life cycle. So it's about 82% worse than carbon dioxide emissions. But also keep in mind that these plants, because they're combusting the gas in the turbine, okay, so this is a gas turbine, mm-hmm. and they're combusting gas. You've got exhaust, so they're also releasing CO2.
Oh, yeah. Just to run the compressor that's actually doing the operation of why the thing's called the compressor plant, right? They need something. Wow.
Right.
So tell me this. What would be the, if someone's listening to this podcast and they want to say, okay, what can I do? You convince me. How can I help? What's the action that you would say people should take?
So right now, if you go to our website, if you go to nocompressor.com, there is
www.nocompressor, one word, right?
.com,
right? And it's got everything there. Yes. Okay.
Everything is there. When you go on, immediately it's going to take you to a page that says act, you know, help us out here. So right now we're running a little bit of a request that people send a note to Senators Markey, Warren, and Congressman Lynch and ask them to send a letter to FERC asking FERC to give us the rehearing. Mm-hmm. This is where we're at. Our first activity was to have people put on the FERC docket, okay, FERC, very nice. You have struck down the denial. Now give us the rehearing. And now that we're in a space that there is an item on the agenda at the upcoming meeting, which is next Thursday, at FERC, there is an item on the Algonquin gas transmission, and that's us, that's Enbridge. Mm-hmm. But we don't know what that's about. It doesn't say anything about rehearing. They've got a lot of stuff going on this whole project. The Atlantic Bridge project goes from Pennsylvania all the way to Canada. So it could be anything. So it's not necessarily us. So we want to keep the pressure on FERC to say, look, there was a court case that said, you can't issue tolling orders anymore. You can't do this. So if they leave us hanging, we're going to have to go back to the drawing board and figure out, okay, what can we do to them? You know, can we take them to court and say, you have violated the Allegheny decision by issuing this de facto tolling order?
And right now, the way to get the attention of the FERC commissioners is to get the attention of Senators Markey and Warren and Richie Neal. Is that no?
Congressman Lynch.
Congressman Lynch. I'm sorry. Yeah. To get them to put the screws to the FERC guys, right? That's the idea.
Right. That's the idea.
And you can go on to the website to get the information there. But I suppose you could. I mean, I have to say I've almost got the Warren and Markey's cell phone numbers memorized for various other things we needn't get into. But I mean, you want to communicate to them that no matter where you are in the state, right, that everyone's a citizen of Massachusetts. You don't have to be from Weymouth. Call them up and say you want this thing on the docket because it's important. Right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. So, you know, when someone had asked in another meeting, well, if I live in, you know, the Berkshires, or, you know, if I'm in McGovern's district or Richie Neal's district, and I write to them, and I said, sure, why not? The more the merrier.
And I think it's important. And would you agree that this is not a, that what's happening in Weymouth is setting a precedent for putting these compressors into any little town that they want. And so that's important to, it's easy to, or so maybe comforting sometimes, say, oh man, not my problem, not my time right now, just give me a break, right? But really, this is like the thin edge of the wedge for doing the same kind of infrastructure in anybody's town. And so you do, we all do have a stake in it, right?
Right. You know, our consideration is that they wanted to be pumping this gas 3 years ago. We've literally held them off for three long years. I mean, we've been fighting for six, but the D-Day started 3 years ago, almost four now. Because they're still not pumping. So they, so we kept saying, all right, they're fighting this way harder than they would have fought anywhere else. Anywhere else, they probably would have said, to heck with those people. We're going to go somewhere else because they're idiots and we don't want to fight with them for 4 years, right? They have spent millions. And that does not include the lost sale of the gas for three solid years. They've spent millions on legal battles, millions on upgrades that the town of Weymouth was able to force them to do. So the project, I think, was budgeted at originally $70 million. It's up to $110 million. The cost overrun. So if there are any stockholders out there listening to me, you should be talking to Enbridge about malfeasance. Mm-hmm. Because why would you do that? So the return on investment is like,
but are you
negligible.
Saying they're putting that money in because they know it's a template for other places, right?
Exactly.
They in Weymouth in order just so they can go someplace else.
Exactly. We said there's two reasons that they're doing this. The first one is to set precedent. That if they can put it here, then put it in Manhattan. That's their whole attitude. See, we put it right in the middle of 100,000 tightly packed people. You know, I'm talking Quincy and Braintree and Weymouth. The population of Quincy alone is close to 97,000. We put this and we put it next to environmental justice neighborhoods, and we put it next to a $500 million brand new bridge. And see, we could put it here, so we can put it anywhere. So they wanted the precedent. And the second thing is spite. We said they could not lose to a group like Frax and a bunch of municipalities. You know, I said they'd be the pariah at the industry cocktail party. So they absolutely could not lose this fight.
Interesting. Wow. So so there is an action at Frax. You can go, you can send a letter to Mark Ewan Warren. I'm sure there's a donate button on the Frax website, because you keep saying about rushing off the federal court. I mean, that's not cheap, right? I mean, that is not an easy thing to do. And so, dear listener, just be aware of that. I mean, Alice, I was going to ask, what, you know, why should people care? But I think from the very beginning, this, you've laid out fairly clearly that this is a high stakes, battle, literally David and Goliath battle, right? Of small towns against Enbridge, which is an enormous, I mean, Google Enbridge, they're a big company, right? And it's got all of the issues that we talk about in climate, right? Everything, infrastructure, justice, power, all these things. And so it matters. Wow. I think Alice, we need to put it down here. This has been a fascinating conversation. What I will do is I'll put up links on the show notes are on the MCAN blog. We'll certainly put up the nocompressor.com link, but let's say it again. It's www.nocompressor.com, and you're in, right? You can learn everything you need to know. If you have any questions about about this show. If you have questions about Weymouth, go to the WWE compressor site, no compressor site. If you have questions about the pod or suggestions, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we should be talking about. Of course, you can listen to this show on your smartphone using all the modern podcast distribution apps. And I hope that you tell your friends to listen to it on their smartphone using their favorite modern podcast distribution app. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Alice, thank you so much for today. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you, Ted. It's been great speaking with you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.